Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff Furniture. They make clever furniture solutions for babies, kids, and teens, and later in the episode, you'll hear how a viral video inspired them to make over a nursery. To see the makeover and find your closest smart shop, visit smartstufffurniture.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing why we're switching up our beach house floor plan. Plus, the master tub versus master closet debate rages on, and Joy Cho from Oh Joy talks about growing a business and the sting of rejection.
Hey, hey.
Hi, guys. I'm trying to decide my caffeine level that is optimal for podcasting. I've had 3 cups of tea, so we're going to see if this is like sort of a crazy hyperspeed chat. I'm hoping that I'm just as relaxed as ever. Tea has less caffeine than coffee, right?
I don't know. I don't drink either. I'm a soda man. Well, I think we are well overdue for a beach house update. We owe you guys a post with some graphics and photos and stuff. We've got tons of those, but let's start on the podcast. How about that? Basically, what happened is when we got in to try to fix some of the things that we knew going into the house, like we knew there was foundation issues, we knew that there were issues with the framing.
And we've mentioned that on other podcasts. I think we offhandedly said how, you know, the whole side had to be rebuilt because right. The foundation was even worse than we thought.
But once we actually got in there with our contractor, things were not as patchable as we thought they would be.
Right. We assumed we could sort of sister beams. That means you keep an old beam and you put a new beam next to it to add support. We thought we'd patch the framing, but instead what it was is everyone saying to us, you should just take that off the house and rebuild.
Yeah, basically we were finding out that it was going to be the same cost because it was so time intensive to patch what was there as just ripping it off and starting over again.
Which we hated because we're like, you're basically saying we're going to take 500 square feet off of our house and then we're going to rebuild it. But the inspector, the contractor, everyone was telling us the same thing. And what they all were warning us of, if we patch it in 5 years, there's a possibility all the drywall on that side of the house would start to pop and crack. So yeah. In rebuilding it, it was sort of extra insurance. And again, the cost was kind of the same because all these patches was just as much.
Yeah.
But it did feel weird to take the house apart and then rebuild it.
Well, weird, but also exciting because it's kind of cool to see the new side going up because it looks a lot more impressive than the like rotted, falling apart holes in the wall side that we bought it with.
Right. It was slowly sinking into the ground and now it feels secure.
It was dying a slow death.
It was. Everyone's watching. Our poor neighbor who out her side windows, all she looked at was that rotten side of the house.
The houses are pretty close together. There's what, maybe like 10 feet between them? So.
Yeah. Maybe more than that. Like, I'd say 2 Johns, so 12 feet.
Right, exactly. 2 Johns. It's a standard unit of measurement.
The cool thing is that it's in a historic neighborhood, so we didn't have a lot of things to figure out about rebuilding it. Since it's historic, the exterior...
Yeah, we just had to match it.
Right, the exterior stays the same, so it's not like we're adding this new part of the house on the old part that will look weird. It will look exactly the same when the siding goes
up. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of stuff to figure out. But we did have to figure out what was going on the inside because you guys probably saw back in December we posted some preliminary floor plan changes we were thinking of doing. And once the new side was built and we could see it a little bit more clearly, we changed our minds a bit.
It's the same as the old side, right? We thought we're not going to change anything. It's the same. We rebuilt everything. But the difference was it wasn't collapsing on itself. So all the debris and stuff that was inside making it feel smaller and in some areas it was so unsafe we couldn't walk into it. Now that it's rebuilt, we can stand in the space. And without all that debris and with the new framed walls, it feels much bigger than we expected.
Yeah, what we had planned to be a mudroom on that side, like a place to come in and throw down your beach stuff and have a washer and dryer, felt gigantic, like a crazy mudroom.
It seemed like we were making this triple wide hallway when it could have been broken up smarter and actually created livable spaces.
Yeah, so we went back to the drawing board a bit on that side and realized we can actually squeeze in another full room, which we think we're going to turn into a breakfast nook kind of on the back of the house.
Which I'm the most excited about. I've never pinned so many breakfast nooks in my life. We are definitely going to do some sort of banquette, I think, with probably a round table for flow. And we'll still get a nicely sized bathroom and a mudroom with a laundry area within that. So I feel like it's still going to be super functional. If you get home from the beach, you want to throw your towels in the laundry and take a shower. You can walk right into the bathroom. So nothing really has to be sacrificed to have this breakfast nook. It feels like we discovered this new extra space, but it was there all along. It just was hiding under like all the rotten debris.
We just weren't using the space because we didn't realize we had it.
Exactly.
And the other thing that happened with adding that breakfast nook is we also had to rethink the kitchen and dining area a little bit as well to make sure that the breakfast nook attached to it in a way that made sense. And I'm not going to try to explain it on the podcast because I think you definitely need the visual to see that.
You guys need an actual floor plan.
Yeah. But basically, the short version is the kitchen is kind of moving closer to the back of the house again, where it used to be. The other thing that's happened is when we went in to look at some of the other rooms that needed some help with the framing, and we were taking off some of the moldy and falling apart plaster, it got kind of scary in there. And the contractor and, again, the inspector.
Everyone around us.
Yeah, was sort of like, guys, you should not keep all of this crappy plaster.
And we wanted to. And the funny thing is our contractor does rehabilitation for old homes. So he hates to get rid of things that you can save. But he was looking us in the eyes and saying, there is no way to save this plaster because there's termite damage and we don't know what beams are going to collapse later.
Yeah.
So you have to gut this house completely. So our house is like basically a skeleton.
Yeah. They basically said it's scarier not knowing what's in there. And from what they could see, it was worth finding out what was going on behind every wall. And also, it will make things like when we run plumbing and electrical cheaper and we'll have less patching at that stage. So as much as it like hurt us.
I know. I was like, it's an old house. Let's just all just say it's an old house. We like old houses. It's going to have some cracks in the plaster.
Yeah, it's not
going
to be perfect. That's fine.
Right. I was like, I am embracing the imperfection. And they were like, you are crazy.
They were like, imperfection is one thing. Falling down is another.
Right. And they basically were saying, even if you patch this plaster, it's going to keep cracking. So you're not going to be happy. We were reluctant. But now that we've done it, I think we feel pretty good about it.
Well, now because of what we can see and the contractors point out, like some of the walls upstairs in the bedrooms, like you could almost kick over with 1 foot.
Our contractor likes to do that, actually.
He likes to make a point sometimes. He's like, this puppy, bam.
And we're like, oh my gosh, warn me.
Yeah. And then I head for a doorway like an earthquake. So they demoed the house for us, the contractor, and so we've been able to see now that whole house open. The only wall they kept was the curved wall.
Yes, thank goodness. And we kept all of the stairs and the stair railing. I mean, we really...
Oh, yeah, and we kept all the millwork. We put that in the shed so that we can hopefully reuse all of that. I'm crossing my fingers because, like, the stream of bad news has gotten me pessimistic about some of these things, but I'm trying to hold out hope. But having it open upstairs allowed us to really see how to break up the rooms there again, because some of the walls that were there were kick-downable. We could move things to make the master in the back a little bit bigger, and we figured out a place to put closets in every room because we were having trouble figuring out where closets went. So I think we've made the upstairs better as well.
Yeah, we're definitely preserving, I think, a lot of the initial footprint, especially upstairs. It's almost going to remain exactly the same, except we're adding a wall here or there or doing something like adding a closet where we think it would be functional. So for the most part, we'll maintain what we saw and loved when we bought it and make smarter use of certain nooks, like an area that we think was maybe an upstairs laundry room, which we think having the laundry downstairs makes more sense for people coming back from the beach, will now be a bunk room. So just little tweaks like that.
Do you think that was a laundry room?
It was. It had a hookup.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't notice that. Beneath all the animal poop.
It was the animal poop room upstairs, guys. We weren't quite sure what they used it for, except that there was a hookup.
Except for animals. We know what the animals used it for.
Right.
So the status right now is that a new roof is going on and they're going to begin re-siding it. And then after that, we can turn to things like framing the interior and starting to run our plumbing and electrical.
All we want to do is be somewhat ready by summer. I think what's going to happen is in the summer, we'll be tiling and doing all the things that we're going to be doing.
Are.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to be fully finished and ready to rent by June.
Yeah. No. So that was our long-winded beach house update. But now we have podcast updates. So the first one is about Roomba. We talked in episode 32 about how we had a so-so experience with ours, and so we sold it and asked for your feedback. And I have to say, when it first went up and I started getting all these tweets like, I love my Roomba. My Roomba is my favorite thing. I was like, oh gosh, I'm the jerk. But I felt somewhat vindicated because we put a poll in our show notes where we asked people how they felt about their Roomba. Again, the majority of people didn't own one, but 60% of the people who owned Roombas were not great fans of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, and the feedback I think supported this, was it has to do with your house and also the type of Roomba you get. Because I actually had an email from someone that said, I got the Costco one too, and I was not impressed.
Oh, really? I didn't
see that. So there are certain ones, I think maybe the Costco one's the cheapest one, and it does the worst job. And maybe
they don't
the
sell
more
it
expensive.
Anymore.
Yeah, it's not for sale. And maybe the more expensive ones are the ones that people are saying, they're amazing and they changed my life.
My big takeaway from the people who told me that they loved it was that I do think I had probably unreal expectations for it. Because someone was like, vacuums are noisy. Any vacuum is noisy.
Right.
And like this person named Laura on Twitter, she said she loves hers, but she does have to babysit it, which was kind of our issue because it would get stuck and we have to move it to room to room. Like, for instance, she said she has one of those black and white striped rugs and it keeps thinking the stripes are an edge. And so it stops all the time.
Oh, it's like, got to get across this rug.
Right, exactly. Oh, I've made it 6 inches. Turn around. Oh, I'm trapped. There were some funny tweets, though. That was kind of my favorite part about this.
Yeah, I liked hearing where their Roombas got stuck, personally. Like, DDTs on Instagram said, "My husband and I were less than impressed. Our Roomba managed to trap itself in her half bathroom."
This one's better from Megan on Twitter. She said her mom's Roomba, whom she named George, was missing for 3 months.
Where did George go?
She had looked everywhere, and when she was visiting, she found it under her wolf range.
Poor George.
Yeah, stuck under the stove.
Just eating like the random Cheerio that's under there too. But then on the other side of that, I got an email that says, "We love our Roomba. It saved my sanity when I went back to work full time last year. I closed the doors to get a more focused clean." This was interesting. "I run it every day in our living areas. When I get home, I put it in a different room every afternoon with the door closed." You know, she's like trapping it in certain rooms and more methodically cleaning, which I think is smart.
Yeah, I had someone else say the same thing, that they close theirs in a room or trap it somehow. And they actually have their son move it. And that's kind of his chore, it sounds like.
Oh, it's like his little robotic friend.
Right, exactly. It's how kids do cleaning chores these days. And you actually had another update from the same episode, right?
Yes. Episode 32 was also where I was telling the story of my friend the realtor, and she came over and she gave a very pointed tip for the bathroom versus closet, essentially saying like the value of this neighborhood and our home would be higher with a big closet and the bathroom footprint that we have instead of stealing the closet to add a tub.
Yeah, she was saying for resale.
Right. And so when I shared that, I got a few people saying to us, "I gotta say," this is Cynthia Robbins from Instagram, "I gotta say, I kind of disagree with your realtor friend on this one, but only because of two things you said in the podcast. One, you have no plans to move, like, ever." So, like, clearly resale shouldn't matter.
She is turning your own words back against you. I like this lady.
"And two, your home has already got some pretty great equity buildup, so wouldn't you want to make your master bath work for you and be the space you truly want it to be, even if it means a little hit to the potential resale value?" Very valid points, and I realized I didn't fully explain myself in that. Sometimes when I'm chatting, I don't hit all the points. So, one of our biggest philosophies is make the house work for you. Don't be decorating the house for the future owner. Decorate it for the current owner, which is you. The thing I didn't reveal is I have never taken a bath in our house in 3.5 years of living here. So while I say I think it would be nice to have a soaker tub because I like to be in hot water, I don't even know if I would use it. And it could be argued maybe it's because I don't have a deep, wonderful soaker tub. But my fear is I would convince John, the non-bather, to take room from our closet.
I do bathe. I'm just not in a bath.
Dirty John over here doesn't want a tub, and I do. And he loves me, so he'd probably be convinced to add a tub and make our closet smaller. But then if I never used the tub, I'd get the side eye from my husband. I'd feel guilted every time I saw the tub and think about how I don't use it. But I think where we ended up on the caring more about the closet than the bath is true. I don't care that much about a bath or I'd be taking them. I just thought it was interesting to hear from a realtor who had a definite perspective, because I thought she'd kind of walk the line with me and say, like, either thing you do will be great.
Instead, she was like, "You're wrong."
John, you're right. Congratulations.
Right. Well, do you want to see if you're right or wrong on this quiz?
Let's do it.
So I thought it'd be fun for Valentine's Day to give you a quiz about everybody's favorite Valentine's Day gift, the commemorative plate.
Nope. The vacuum.
The souvenir baseball.
I love my souvenir baseball. You got me. I'll always treasure it.
No, flowers.
Okay.
Specifically the rose.
I don't know how much I know about roses.
Well, you're going to find out how many of these fun facts about roses that you know.
Okay.
So we like to call this segment What's Not. I'm going to give Sherry 5 facts about roses. 4 of them are real, 1 is fake, and she has to tell me what's real and what's not. First fact, roses were brought to the United States by French explorers in the 1500s.
Sounds believable.
George Washington was America's first rose breeder.
Also sounds believable.
Roses are the official flower of the United States.
I don't know if I believe that. They seem very English. They're English roses.
While red roses are known to symbolize love, yellow roses...
Friendship!
...are thought to symbolize infidelity.
What?! I thought yellow was friendship.
And June, not February, is National Rose Month.
Well, roses bloom in June. I think they're not the national flower. They're not America's flower.
You are incorrect. Roses are the official flower of the United States as of 1986. They are also the official state flower of 4 states and the District of Columbia.
Wow. Roses for the win.
Yep.
So now I have to do my second guess, which is typically also wrong. I'm going to say the yellow rose is infidelity. It's so weird, you probably didn't make it up, but I've never heard it.
I would never make something up like that. That's true according to some charts about what the different rose colors mean.
In what application does that happen? Like, I don't know. Someone cheats on you and you get them yellow roses?
That's like the side-eye bouquet.
That is. It's like, here you go, jerk.
Yeah, ladies, if you're getting yellow roses.
Oh, you're saying maybe the man gives them to you to say, like, you're not
I don't know. One. That's a shady way to go about that kind
it
of news.
It is shady. I thought it was like someone cheats on you and you buy yellow roses and you break them over their head or something.
Exactly. You're 0-2.
I'm terrible. So is it the George Washington thing?
No, that's true as well.
Oh my gosh. It's the first one.
Yes, it's the first one. I had made up the fact that they were brought here by French explorers. Roses are actually native to the United States.
That's why they're America's flower.
That's why everyone loves them.
That makes total sense. Sorry, I failed you, roses.
Although apparently in 1986, when the Senate was passing this thing about roses being the national flower, there was one senator who wrote an impassioned plea that marigolds should be the national flower.
The underdog of flowers, the marigold.
Right. Well, these facts came from a variety of sources, 1-800-Flowers, Good Housekeeping, and Women's Day, and I'll put links to all of my sources, which had other facts as well, such as what all the other colors of roses mean.
Now you're on your Google, it's always going to show you ads of flowers because you've been Googling flowers.
Or maybe I've been buying flowers.
Ooh.
Well, what we're going to do next is give a ring to Joy Cho, who you guys probably know as Oh Joy, the blogger, the Pinterest powerhouse, the...
designer?
Yes, of many things. So let's give a ring.
Hi, Joy. How you doing?
Hi, good. How are you?
I feel like I know your voice from like social media.
I know, you too.
Well, I think we wanted to talk to you a little bit about your business because, you know, we did start blogging sort of at the same time-ish. I think you were, what, 2005?
2005, yes.
Yeah, and so we were a little later, 2007. But I think we're similar in that both of us didn't really start a blog with any inkling that it might turn into something more. And so I thought maybe it'd be nice to start if you could tell our listeners just a little bit about the evolution of Oh Joy, you know, how it started and how it has become what it is today.
Well, in 2005, I had left New York, where I was working as a designer, to move to Philadelphia. And Philly is actually where I'm from, but my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was just starting a long-term residency there. And I pretty much figured, okay, I'll just get another design job, and Anthropologie, Urban Outfitters, Free People, that whole conglomerate is based in Philadelphia, and that was what I planned. I said, all right, well, Joy, you're a go-getter, you go after what you want, and if that's what you want, it's like kind of like the secret, like Oprah says, that's what you're going to get. And so I interviewed Anthropologie. I had some great interviews, but they didn't have the position that I was interested in and that I was a good fit for. And while I was super bummed, it was just one of those things where I was like, something that I set my mind to actually did not work out. And so while I was still looking for a full-time job, I had to start paying my bills. I had to start working. And so I started freelancing as a designer. My friend told me to start a blog. And I was like, what is a blog? Like, are you serious? This is like what Doogie Howser does.
That's the same
That's
reaction.
That's my exact reaction to John. I'm like, what a nerd face you are. You start a blog. And then like a day later, I'm like, can I write on your blog?
Exactly. And so back then, as you both know, there were blogs, but it wasn't what we see them as they are today with photos. And they were more journalistic and they were more diary based. And so I had no desire to do that. So I really used it as a place for uploading and sharing inspirations. And it was a way to just do a virtual version of what my sketchbook would be like. So for me, it was totally on the side. And so while I was looking for jobs, the blog itself, as it grew and more people started reading it, it started helping me get client work for the design business that I had. And so I got more and more freelance work to the point where I said, you know what, if I really focus on this and if I make Oh Joy not just a blog, but also a design business, I could do this full time and I could have my own design studio. And that's pretty much what happened within the year of after starting my blog. And so Oh Joy, the blog, served for a very long time as a side part of Oh Joy. I think that people don't realize that because a lot of people, their point of entry is the blog. But for a good, probably until about 2011 or so, Oh Joy, the design studio was the majority of my focus and the blog was on the side. I really only made the blog more of a focus when my first baby came in 2011 and I needed to shift away from client work. I needed to have the more flexibility to be able to do my work a little bit more on my time frame and not have to worry that if I was spending time with my daughter, that a client was waiting for me to change a color and a logo, or they needed this, they needed that, and they needed things like right away now. I now have a staff of people for Oh Joy. That's not just for the blog, but it's a combination of our licensed products, our editorial content, video, we've had books. And so Oh Joy has really grown into a lifestyle brand that has multiple components. The main pieces being our product lines, which are currently at Target, as well as Oh Joy, the editorial part and the blog and social media and video that most people are familiar with.
That's totally my point of entry. So I thought, oh gosh, she's been like really paying attention to the blog all these years. But it's funny to think that it was sort of like a second fiddle. But it makes sense because I think we both, you know, when we started our website, it couldn't be your main fiddle because you had a job because no one was making money off a website.
But exactly.
I wonder anyone who's listening now who might think, oh my gosh, that was just like the right time to get into blogging and I'm new and I'll never grow and I'll never have that kind of exposure. What advice would you give to someone who might be interested in getting into what you and I do now, but they feel like maybe the moment has passed?
I think it's evolved a lot. And to me, there was a time where the blog was king. Like, if you wanted to be able to reach people in a different way. And I always say, I wrote a book about blogging. And this is something I say in the book and I say to people all the time, is that the internet gives you this ability to share your voice and share your talents and share your abilities with strangers, which you would have never been able to do before. And there was a very specific time when I told everybody to start a blog. Now, I think it's different. I don't think you necessarily have to start a blog per se as a way to share your voice. I think that there are so many social media channels now that I always tell people to see which channels and which apps work best for you and what you're creating. There are some people who have super strong Instagram accounts and can share their content with one simple photo, and maybe that goes to their work, whether they're a photographer or an interior designer or whatever it is, without having a blog. I think that you always need some home base if the home base is your blog or your home base is your main professional website or your online store, whatever that is. And social media helps to bring people in, but I don't think that having a blog is the answer for everybody now.
I feel like what you said also about people who have a unique voice or something to say or a talent to show off is a really interesting point for people to pay attention to, because I think we get asked the same kind of question, like, how do I get started? How do I grow my blog? And I don't always feel like I have the answer because the scenario is so different now than it was when I did it.
Absolutely.
But I do think the people who are looking for the overnight success, the thing that they're overlooking is that you actually, that time where you're not having much of an audience is really important, I think, to figure out your voice and figure out what platforms are best for conveying that. And so I think that kind of down low time when you're just starting is actually a great place to spend some good time, you know, whether you like it or not.
Absolutely. And I think it took me a really long time, both as a blogger, as a designer, as a business owner. Like, there are different things at Oh Joy that have evolved over time. There's always been some key components in terms of love of color and whimsy. But in terms of what I really know define my brand and what makes a good DIY or what makes a good home decor post or whatever, it's definitely evolved to the point where now I feel very strong about being able to say yes or no to ideas that my team has for creating content. I know, but there was a time when I didn't necessarily know. Sometimes you evolve it and you figure it out over time. And I think that, like you said, you do need that time to grow. But also, I think that now, because there are people as professional bloggers that you see who have done it, it does seem like it's an overnight thing. It does seem like it happens super fast. It does seem like it's not a lot of work for maybe a lot of reward. And as you and I both know, it's not everybody that I know who does this for a living. It's a ton of work. People are working beyond your normal 40-hour work week. Yes, we have flexibility with our families. And yes, we get to do some cool things that seem so glamorous. But I think that a lot of times people forget about all the other crap stuff that we do too that are behind the scenes. So I think just like with any other job, it all requires hard work and dedication and time put in, and nobody is an overnight success. I mean, everybody has put in a ton of work in some way. It's just you don't always get to see that.
Well, and I think on that topic, one question I was curious to ask you is, you know, when you look at it just very broadly, your story, you know, it is very inspiring how you took this little thing and turned it into what it is today. But I'm sure there were some setbacks along the way. I wondered if there are any that you could share just to sort of let people know that it's okay, you're going to hit those.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for me, rejection, there's been lots of points of rejection along the way. There's been some things like when I was freelancing and I had design clients where I got fired from some projects because I took things that maybe weren't necessarily the right fit, but sometimes you're at a point where you have to pay your bills or work is slow. And there's been lots of things that I've pitched that I have not gotten. I pitch a ton in terms of a lot of my product collaborations I go after, mostly because, again, I am a go-getter and I do feel that I've gone after a lot of what I want. And the majority of things that have happened have been because I've been very adamant about going after it, but not everybody says yes. And sometimes you set yourself up for this yes that you think you're going to get and it's a no. And then all of a sudden you've built in your mind all these things you're going to do. And then the no changes the trajectory of a bunch of sort of dreams and goals that you've set in your mind. So there's been a lot of that over the course of my career where things just don't turn out. I mean, just like life, just like daily life and relationships and personal things and things with your kids, there are things that don't go your way. But for me, I've realized that in those moments, they suck at the time and they seem terrible and you feel upset or you feel disappointed or you feel rejected, but it's always set a new direction for me and it's given me a chance to reset and rethink about my brand or my company or the way that I work or the way that I am as a boss and improve upon all of those things.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories to tell is that we designed an entire line of rugs for a huge company. And the whole time we were doing it, we were like, this is going to be the big project. And then at the very end, they told us the price points. And we were like, what? That's not what we were talking about. We don't spend that much on a rug. We can't ask our audience to spend that much on a rug. We can't even put our name on that. And so all the rugs came out without our name and nothing happened. We didn't get a dime. And we'd worked on it for a year. And it was annoying and frustrating and sort of soul crushing, but it also taught us so many lessons that it's almost like you would have paid a year of your life to learn those lessons anyway. So I think it teaches you things about how to negotiate. It teaches you things that immediately might decide that a partnership isn't good. It's like knowing what to ask a potential guy you're going to date at the beginning instead of finding out on your wedding night.
Who are you dating? Who are we talking about?
There were frogs before you, John Petersick.
I mean, and that's the thing too, is that I had a recent change in my business that really kind of like rattled me for a little bit because I cried a lot about it. But at the same time, I know that I'm one of those people, I call myself a hustler in the sense of the day after I was like, okay, well, now it's time to figure out what's next.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think we really admire that about you. I loved watching all the things you designed and been like, wow, Band-Aids? Who gets to design Band-Aids?
Those are super fun. We're going on our third round of Band-Aids next year. And even though they're the tiniest little piece of anything that I've ever designed that we've taken on as a design project, it's so fun because you see them, like you just see it on like knees and fingers and moms have them in their purses. So it's been a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah, I call those sightings in the wild.
Yes.
Once we were in an airport and someone was pulling her luggage and holding our book under her arm. And I about lost my mind because I'm like, when you see it at Barnes & Noble, you kind of know it's going to be there. It's a book. But just like some person getting off of an airplane, carrying it. And then we were in the same line getting a bagel. And then she's making the connection like, oh my gosh. And we signed her book and took a picture. But I was like, you have no idea. You seem excited to see me. I'm more excited to see you because it was like a wild sighting of the book.
Yeah. Someone, we were at Shake Shack recently and there was this dad wearing our Oh Joy for Target diaper backpack. And it's like one of our best sellers, and the dad was wearing it, which again is a great thing because that's why people love it so much, is because dads are feel a little bit more comfortable wearing it. But I saw a dad and I was like, oh my gosh, you have my backpack. And he turned around and he looked at me for a second like, who's this crazy lady? And then the wife, who was the one who initiated the purchase, saw us and we started talking and I was just like flipping out. And same thing with you. I think that we have these jobs that allow us to be able to create things for people to use and to incorporate into their homes and their lives. And it seems sometimes you're so distant from it because you just see it online or you see it on a shelf or whatever. But when you see it really integrated in a real person's life that they use on a daily basis in some way and it makes them happy, I mean, that's like the best thing because you're like, wow, people really are using this thing that I created in the way that I had hoped, and to see it executed and actually happening is just such a great thing.
I was so happy to hear the word backpack at the end of that sentence because at first I just heard you say, I saw this dad wearing the Oh Joy for Target diaper. I was like, where's this going, Joy? But I do think that's one thing that's so cool about all the products you do is just the variety of things. I mean, from Band-Aids to diaper bags to wallpaper to, you know, all these different things that you can bring your design aesthetic to. Is there anything you're dying to create?
I mean, so much. I could pretty much list off 100 things to you. But I mean, in general, what we're working on next is just more. It's like expanding more into home decor, expanding more into baby and kids. And because our babies that we're dressing are also getting older and they're turning into kids. So I just want to continue to be to create more for this audience that is so loyal and loves our sense of color and whimsy and all the things that we bring to our products.
That sounds like a joyful note to end on. Well, so good talking to you, Joy.
You too. Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Bye, Joy.
If you guys want to check out some of the stuff we talked about with Joy, like some of her product collaborations or her blog, we're going to put links to all of that in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
The Band-Aids. We're going to link to the Band-Aids, guys. They're really cute.
I'll just link to a picture of Sherry covered in them.
Yeah, I'm going to put the Band-Aids all over my body and not wear clothes.
It's that, whoa.
It's going to be tasteful. It's going to be tasteful. Haven't you seen Project Runway where they do challenges using household items?
I don't
items?
Think that's the type of marketing that Joy is looking for.
You're right.
Well, before we do our We're Digging, let's take a quick break.
As you guys know, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff, who creates clever and stylish kids furniture that's designed to grow from baby to teen.
And actually, speaking of babies, you guys may remember that viral video from last year of a woman putting her granddaughter in her crib. It's kind of that grainy, dark footage from a baby monitor. Well, this is Valerie, the grandmother from the video.
Lola fell asleep, and, you know, I have put her in that baby bed probably 500 times before. I always use the step stool because I felt like I could really get her into the bed more easily. As the video shows, I got top heavy.
You guys see where this is going? Valerie tips right over into the crib with Lola.
Everyone's okay, and everyone got a big laugh out of it. So much so, they put the video on Facebook.
That clip of Valerie toppling into Lola's too tall crib now has over 58 million views, and it caught the attention of the people at Smart Stuff.
Yeah, they thought the family could definitely use some safer and more functional furniture in the room, so they swooped in to make over the entire nursery. New changing table, new glider, and of course a new convertible crib that means Grandma Valerie can finally put away her crib stool.
You can see the whole makeover being revealed to the family, and of course the viral video that started it all, by visiting smartstufffurniture.com/YHL.
And totally flawless, not awkward transition to the We're Digging music. So this week, I'm digging a really easy upgrade we did to the outlet in our hall bathroom, you know, like the plug. We've got one above the counter, you know, it's one that you might usually plug a hairdryer in or something, but our kids don't really use it, so it's just kind of there. But what we did to it to make it actually function was we replaced the standard plug with one that had a built-in nightlight in it. It was just this like basic outlet that you might get at Home Depot or Amazon or whatever. I think it was $20. And it still has the two plugs in it, but between them, it has just these tiny guide lights. And they are light activated, so when the room gets dark enough, they automatically turn on.
It's auto. I could see someone putting these in every room, just if they're like trying to get through it during the night, or they have an animal. Like, we have a dog who likes to eat his food and drink his water with the light on, so we're always having to run. He'll bark, and we'll be in the middle of something, but if it's dark, we'll have to run upstairs and turn the light on for him. We'd be smart to install this in there because it would auto turn on.
If we had an outlet in our closet, I would definitely do it.
Oh, you're right. We don't have one there.
Right.
Dang.
But we did have this one in the bathroom, and we had at one point had a nightlight plugged into it because when our daughter gets up in the middle of the night or early in the morning, we wanted her to be able to see and not, you know, trip into the toilet or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, kids. But the nightlight was like kind of bulky and all that stuff. So I saw this thing on the shelf one day. I picked it up. It installs just like a normal outlet. So if you've ever replaced an outlet or receptacle, it is the exact same motion. And we actually have a tutorial on our website that I will link to in case you haven't done it. It's super easy. So I will put a link to the one that we bought in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. I'll also put a picture so you can see what it actually looks like in case you're having trouble understanding what I'm describing.
Yeah, because if you're listening, you might be like, what's the point? You had a nightlight. Why'd you make that change? But the difference in looks is really nice. It's definitely an upgrade.
Picture one of those As Seen on TV things where someone's like fumbling with a bulky nightlight.
Right. This solves all your problems. Right. If you're fumbling around with a nightlight. No, I think it's just for looks.
Have you poked yourself in the eye with a nightlight?
It does have prongs.
Exactly.
Okay, well, this week I am digging something I was convinced was called Sugaroo, but then we Googled it, and I guess it's called...
Sugru.
Sugru.
Yes, as it's spelled, S-U-G-R-U.
Right. Some bloggers have talked about this, and I was like, meh, bloggers and all their, like, newfangled things.
Yeah, what do they know?
But then I bought this, and I actually really like it. It's self-setting rubber. And you're like, what do you use that for? Well, the reason I bought it is, you know how the cords that charge your phone get like frayed and you see the little silver inside wire?
Yeah, like always cracks at the end.
Yeah, like the wire comes out at the very end. And then they work for a little bit longer and then they break. So I bought this Sugru because it's like Play-Doh, right? You open this little packet and you roll it where the cord is fraying and make like sort of a sheath. And it bonds and in 24 hours it sets and it's rubber and it's bendable rubber. So it is durable and it covers up the fraying. So what I'm hoping it does is elongates the life of all these cords that keep fraying. And then on future cords I buy, if and when these break, I can use it too. And I got this from Amazon. I got the 8-pack because I wanted all the different colors. I just think there's lots of cool things I could do with it. And I think it was around $20. Yeah. But like an example would be, you know how you have keys and you buy those rubber covers for keys in different colors?
Oh, you know I want to do this.
Right? You love this. And I have blue, red, yellow. I have all the colors. And you can even make a shape like kitty ears or something
fun. I do not want that.
But essentially, since this is Play-Doh, you can mold it around the top of a key and make it a colored key so you can identify it on your keychain. That's another example they give. A few other ways people have used it is you could keep your cord from falling back behind something by making like a little tube of it. So you put your charger through it and it holds it up like on the back of a desk. Exactly. You could put it on the back of shoes that rub. You know how you buy those little foam pads for the back of shoes? Well, women do. I'm always buying them. If you create a little rubber pad in your shoe, it cures in your shoe. It stays there and then your shoe has nice grip and it doesn't cut into your heel anymore. The only warning I'm giving everyone and John, because he's right in front of me, is that it does say to store it in the fridge if you want it to last double long. You know, it has an expiration date, but if you leave it in the fridge, you can double that. So like years longer. So my warning is I'm putting it in the fridge and I hope you don't eat it.
Oh, thank you.
Because with a name like Sugaroo or Sugru, you might think it's like a sauce and just put it on a sandwich.
It does come in a little like ketchup packet.
Exactly. So buyer beware. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. Picture me giving you guys a big old virtual box of Valentine's Day chocolates because I love you.
And thanks to everyone who's taken a moment to review our podcast on iTunes, including my Aunt Liz, who just left one the other day. It was quick and easy, just as I'd promised. Thanks, Liz.
And keep telling us what you do while you listen, like Aqua Blue 2 from Instagram, who listens from sunny Trinidad while she and her husband build their new home from scratch.
And head over to younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode, like a picture of that new side of our beach house and a few of the breakfast nooks that Sherry has been pinning.
But sadly, no pictures of me wearing an outfit made of Band-Aids.
Oh, maybe next time.
Bye.
Later.
You know all I want is a bathtub full of candy hearts. I don't ask for much.
Said with a burp.
It was a swallow.
There was some throat event.
I don't ask. Pause for effect. For much.